So this morning is a little different setup of class. We are observing today the disappearance of Rupa Goswami. And we'll try to speak something about Rupa Goswami and his particular mood of serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And maybe we can learn something to follow in those footsteps and become perfect in our devotional life. So as we are, as I said, we are observing the disappearance of Rupa Goswami today. So I'll just read a little bit about Rupa Goswami's biography in a short, because it's a very long biography, but due to time constraint, we don't have enough time to go into the whole details of his biography. Although it would be nice to go into the whole thing, because it is stated that of the six Goswamis, Rupa Goswami was the most empowered and trusted lieutenant, you can say, or commander-in-chief after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was considered the fountainhead of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition after the departure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although his elder brother Sanatana Goswami was equally powerful and pure in his heart, but Rupa Goswami was specially empowered, and all the Vaishnavas at the time considered him as the Acharya, in other words, the successor of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Rupa Goswami appeared in 1489, chief among the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who directly followed Lord Chaitanya. He was renowned as a great scholar and a devotee of Lord Krishna. Together with his elder brother Sanatana Goswami, he once served as the highest-ranking officer under the Hussein Shah. After meeting Lord Chaitanya, however, the brothers abandoned their post to dedicate themselves to presenting Lord Chaitanya's teachings systematically. One, uncovering Lord Krishna's lost places of pastimes. Two, installing deities and establishing their worship. Three, writing devotional literatures. And four, teaching the rules of bhakti yoga or devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami wrote many books, including Bhakti Rasanatra Sindhu, The Nectar Devotion, which gives the essence of all scriptures regarding bhakti yoga. He left this world in 1564. Rupa Goswami, the foremost of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, was incarnation of Rupa Manjari, the most important of the eight confidential maidservants of Srimati Radharani, an eternal spiritual Vrindavan. It is said that without taking shelter of Srila Rupa Goswami, one cannot enter into the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And without taking the shelter of Rupa Manjari, one cannot enter into the confidential pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. In course of time, Mukunda's son, Kamadeva, moved from Jaisore. His sons were Santosha, is Rupa. Before his name was Rupa Goswami, he was named Santosha. And Amara was Sanatan, and Sri Vallabha was Anupam. On the demise of Kumaradev, the three sons moved to Sukarma, near the capital of Gauryadesh, Bengal, where they continued their studies. The three brothers studied the Nyay Shastra, treatise of rhetoric, from the famous logician Vasudev Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya and his brother Madhusudan Vidyachaspati. They also studied Sanskrit, Arabic, and Persian. Interesting that along with Sanskrit, they learned Persian and Arabic. Due to their noble character and academic proficiency, Rupa and his elder brother Sanatan were later forced into government service by the Sultan of Bengal, Alauddin Hussein Shah, 1493 to 1519, which led to their excommunication from Hindu society by the orthodox caste brahmanas of the Gouda. Rupa became the Sultan's chief secretary, Dabir Khas, while Sanatan became the state revenue minister, Sakhar Malik. Rupa and his brother made their residence in the state capital of Ramakeli, And it was there in 1514 that they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the first time. In that time, all three brothers were employed as important ministers in the Mohammedan government of Bengal under the Hussein Shah. So we can understand that Rupa Goswami, of course, now we understand by revelation from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that Rupa Goswami was none other than the same Rupa Manjari, one of the eight principal Manjaris who is serving the principal gopis who are in turn serving Radharani. So without actually understanding the mood of Sri Rupa Goswami, we cannot actually get into the essence of devotional service. Although we are all taught by Srila Prabhupada that Prabhupada came to the West, he brought the transcendental secret of getting to know Krishna through devotional service. And Prabhupada expanded devotional service in many different forms that we can engage in the principal service of devotion by engaging everything we have, mind, body, and soul, in the service of the Lord. So Prabhupada expanded very much this concept. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Bhaktiya mam abhijananti, that without bhakti, without devotion, you cannot understand me. So Rupa Goswami is credited, although he is the younger brother of Sanatan Goswami, of the six Goswamis, Rupa Goswami was very much in mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He actually understood the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is why that prayer is dedicated to him. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Swapadatikam. Mano Bhistam. Mano Bhistam means Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam. Mano Bhistam means the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is been understood by Rupa Goswami. And because he could understand the actual mind of Rupa Goswami, he could very profusely preach the Sankirtan movement. And therefore he became one of the leaders of preaching the Sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Of course, we can understand now by revelation from Srila Prabhupada that the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to establish the Sankirtan movement, the Yuga Dharma. It is very important to understand that not in every Kali Yuga Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. Only once in the day of Brahma, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to establish this very unique form of Yuga Dharma, which enables the living entities to become freed from the entanglement of birth and death. So many times we find that in our own practice of Krishna consciousness, that it is very difficult. We find the process of bhakti very difficult. To be focused in Krishna consciousness very difficult. To stay the whole journey from awakening from our deep slumber of maya, and we have awakened somehow by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord and His pure devotee, that we have been awakened in our hearts to spirituality. And then we inquire, athat o Brahma Jignasa. We make this Jignasa of Brahma. Who is the Lord? What is my purpose? Why I am here? And all that things. And when we are awakened from this deep slumber, we come to Krishna consciousness and we find it is so difficult. Actually, this is the most simplest process ever to be introduced to the living entities to be freed from the entanglement of Maya's illusionary world. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave us the most simplest form. And what did he say? Simply chant the holy name of the Lord. And he emphasized the teachings which was established by Vyasadev in the Puranas and in the Upanishads. Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. Now it's a very simple process. You simply chant the holy name. Simply chant. That's all you have to do. But we have very much difficulty in chanting the holy names. Although every day, due to our personal vows, that I will chant at least minimum 16 rounds. Even that we find so difficult to chant. because our mind is not under control. And Prabhupada is teaching us that simply if we focus our mind in the service of the Lord, then everything else becomes natural and automatic. But we are not so much enthusiastic to focus in the service of the Lord. Most of us, we do service due to obligation. Suppose we are living in the ashram. In the ashram, rules, regulations are there, that if you're going to be a member of the ashram, then there are certain specific duties allocated to you, which you have to perform. And if you are lapsing in your service, then the authorities will call you in and say, "Dear Prabhu, dear Mataji, listen, there are certain conditions which we have to fulfill, certain obligations we have to fulfill in order to function in the ashram. And for the ashram to be very healthy and function nicely with all its attributes, then we have to focus and do our service. Each one has to pull the socks up and pull in and put in their energy in order for the ashram to run nicely. And after some times, if we are not so much enthusiastic about it, then we will kindly be asked that, please, maybe this is not a place for you. You can live outside in your own little world and try and engage in Krishna's service as much as possible and develop spiritually. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we are kind of feeling obliged to do service. But we are not doing spontaneous service out of love. I was speaking yesterday that whatever we do in the devotional life, it should be coming from free will, from our heart. Because that is where the center of love is based, in the heart. And why in the heart? Because the heart is where the soul and the super soul are. So the loving experience, which is at the center of the heart, is coming from the soul. Why the soul is so much full of love is because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And as you all understand, Sachit Ananda is the qualities of the soul similar to the Supreme Lord. He is also Sachit Ananda. But his Sachit and Ananda is limitless. Whereas ours, while we are engaged in this body, it is restricted, limited. But you can go beyond the boundaries of this body if you rise above the bodily concept. And we hear this many times Prabhupada speak, especially if you listen to Prabhupada's lectures in the early parts of 66, 67. He's so much emphasizing, we are not this body. And we as practicing devotees, and I use my words very carefully, practicing devotees, because we are not as yet devotees. If we were devotees, then we would be completely, fully absorbed in the principle of devotional service as described by the great, great devotees in the scriptures. And of course, today as we are remembering Rupa Goswami, he's the topmost, who is fully embracing the principle of serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. just to emphasize, as we see, we hear from here, that as young boys, they moved after their father departed to nearer to Bengal, and then they, as they were growing up, they were studying. It's interesting, as I mentioned, why they learned Parsi and Arabic. Because at that time, it was the height of the Islam as establishment in the so-called India of today. Of course, in those days, it wasn't India. India became into existence in 1947. But prior to that, it was many, many, many kingdoms, some small, some large, many, many royalties were there. And of course, the Mongols came in from the Arabian Peninsula and conquered everyone by brute force, and said, either you accept Allah as your master or you perish. And some of those who are weak, they kind of accepted it. and converted into the so-called Islamic following of religion. And the others, they were very fixed in their conviction and their faith in the Dharma, which we now call Hindu Dharma, but actually it was called Sanatana Dharma. And interesting is here is that Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Anupama, his youngest brother, they all came from where? From? Brahmin family, but where was origin from their place of birth? Not East Bengal. Jai Krishna. South India. It's interesting to see and understand that of the Goswamis, Gopal Bhatt Goswami, South India. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, South India. Of course, Jiva Goswami is the son of Anupam youngest brother. Also, his origin is South India. Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, all the six Goswamis, they come from South. Of course, we kind of think that they were, because they were brought up in what is present in Bangladesh, was the maternal home of Rupa Goswami. So after the demise of their father, they kind of took shelter of their maternal uncle. And then were brought up there, and then they grew up very intelligent, young people, very bright, and that's why they were very expert. And the reason they had to learn this language was that in those days, the Persians who came from Iran and Muslims who came from Saudi Arabia were forcing everybody to learn this language. And as I read out from the printout here, of his biography of Rupa Goswami, that Rupa Goswami was forced into becoming a minister in the Nawab of Alauddin Hussein's government. He didn't come by choice, but they were practicing the Brahmanical duties and performing all kind of activities according to spirituality. But then they were forced, and because they were forced to come into the government of the Nawab Hussein of Bengal at that time, they were ostracized from the society. They're saying, you are now Malechas. You have been employed by Malechas. You are taking money from the Malechas. You're eating food which is bought by money coming from the Malechas. So you are not anymore Brahmanas. So, of course, they were unfortunate to be in that situation. But as we understand that when they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Mahaprabhu was coming from Vrindavan and went past to Ramakeli, and that is where Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Anupama, they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And immediately after that first meeting, what happened? They said, this is it. We have finally come to the real understanding of our purpose in this material world. Of course, they were not conditioned like you and I. As is mentioned from hindsight now, that Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari, so it's an eternally liberated personality. But when they come into this material world, they have to kind of follow certain rules and regulations, which is governed by the principle of the material world. Anyway, they actually met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and what did they do? Mahaprabhu instructed them, give up all this. Go to Vrindavan. So when they were given this order by the Supreme Lord, immediately they surrendered. Now, we understand that Rupa Goswami was Jai Sri Radha Gopalananda. Rupa Goswami was very much a wealthy person. He wasn't a very, very, you can say, a poor person, just living on a meager allowance coming from the government of Bengal at the time. He came from a very, very rich family. In terms of their richness, is that when Rupa Goswami understood the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, Mano Bistam, understood the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately decided, now, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take up this mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and establish under the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to follow his instructions. Immediately he took all his wealth. Now, his wealth was not small. He could fill in boats full of gold. Not just paper money. This is real, real money, you can say, gold. And then he took 10,000 gold coins and he gave it to a merchant in Bengal. I said, keep this as safekeeping. And when I send a message to you, you release this money for that purpose. Of course, in those days, there were a lot of people who were trusted. You know, I mean, you know, you can't just go to a grocer down the town and says, hey, look, I've got like 50,000 pounds here. I'm going to give it to you. Keep it in safekeeping with you until later when I need it or someone needs it and I will instruct you. You give that money to that person. The minute you give him, say, yes, yes, I will do it. And then after that, you turn your back. Hey, it's my money. And then when you go and ask him for your money back, he say, what money? You can't trust. But of course, in those days, there were some ethics. Anyway, the point was, Rupa Goswami gave 10,000 gold coins to this merchant. And the rest he took. And then he went back to his maternal place. And he gave 50% of that to charity. Then other 25% he gave away to his family. And the other 25% of what is left over, he kept just in case if there is some emergency. Because remember, this is not the happiest of times, because there are rulers who are not quite following the Vedic Dharma, all Muslims, and they're kind of put into difficulty. And this is from the very beginning of time. If you are in most difficult situation and you want to get out of that, all you do is give some money on the side, you know. And you give some money and then you buy him off and you are freed from your difficulties. It is going on since the beginning of time. So, of course, when we hear this statement, and Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Purport, this is the principle which we should follow. Now, how many of us had given whatever we have, 50% to charity? And of course, Prabhupada says this charity was not just given to willingly anyone. It was given to pure devotees. And what purpose was what is the purpose for that? Is that the pure devotees, when he receives this wealth, he doesn't think, whoa, money, I'm rich now. No. He just thinks that this is Krishna's arrangement, that it has come to me, I must now utilize this money for Krishna's service. So this is a very important aspect of understanding that when we are a recipient of money or any material possession, we should simply think, this has come to me by grace of the Supreme Lord. This is His mercy. How now can I utilize this for the service of the Lord? And this is the principle of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was one time asked by one journalist, and he said, Swamiji, you are receiving so much money. You have millions of dollars. What do you do with this? And Prabhupada sort of laughed a little bit and said, well, it's okay. This is all used for propagating Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada used everything he got for propagating Krishna consciousness. Now, this is the principle of Rupa Goswami. Now, imagine that Rupa Goswami was a very wealthy person. He gave away all his wealth practically. And then, when he left Ramakeli to go to Vrindavan to fulfill the order of the Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what was his instruction? As we got the four things which are mentioned here. Anybody paid attention to the four things? Yes, excavate places of pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan. worship, write books, and teach the principle of bhakti. These are the four things. So, when Rupa Goswami left, did he leave his place of residence and went to Vrindavan with a suitcase full of baggaging, all kind of needs, that I am going to Vrindavan, I will need this, that, and other? We go to Vrindavan, and we go to the max of whatever the airline allows us. If it's 30 kg, we go to full 30 kg. You know, and if they allow more, we take full. And why we take all these things? I will need this in Vrindavan. And then when you go to Vrindavan, what do? Prior to your reaching Vrindavan, you already phone up someone and say, Prabhu, MVT, or this guest house, or this is the new guest house which you built, which has got better facilities. Book it for me. And everything is done. Rupa Goswami went there with what? No bookings, no baggage. To the extent that even the clothing they were wearing, very opulent clothing, they discarded. And they're wearing loincloth. And this cloth which they were wearing was not even something which they bought. It is a cloth which is discarded after the cremation of a person. So before the cremation of the body, there is a cloth which is covering the body. They discard this and just throw it on the side. And then, of course, do the cremation. That cloth is touched by nobody, because it is considered very contaminated and not to be used by anyone. But Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they took that and they took that as their garment and went to Vrindavan. So this is the level of surrender which is expected of all of us. Can we come to that level of surrender? We can't. Because we are still so attached to petty things that I need. But we don't need anything. All we need is the holy name. We don't need anything, just the holy name. Of course, we don't have full faith in the holy name. Prabhupada explains very clearly, and many times Prabhupada has emphasized, the holy name of the Lord is known different from Krishna. Krishna and the holy name are the same. So if Krishna and his holy name is known different, then whatever Krishna can provide, his holy name can provide. But we don't have that faith in his holy name. And therefore, we become completely lost in our devotional life. And as I said in the beginning, we find it difficult to execute devotional service because we don't have that full faith in the holy name. So if you simply had full faith in the holy name, then the holy name will provide everything we need. In one of the purports of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says very clearly that anybody who has dedicated their lives to worshipping Krishna and in the process of Krishna consciousness, all his material needs are taken care of by the Supreme Lord. You don't have to make any separate endeavor. Krishna will take care of your needs. But we don't have faith in it. And therefore, we kind of calculate with our own abilities and our intelligence that I will gather this, I will gather that, I will need this, I will need that for my execution of devotional service. Basically, you don't need anything, because what is devotional service? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is the holy name. That is devotional principle. We don't need anything. But we are worried. What I eat tomorrow? What I will eat today? And think, oh, when the class finishes, what is breakfast time? You know, you're thinking, yesterday I was fasting from grains. You know, am I going to get something which is kind of, you know, satisfying my tongue and my belly? You know, this is what we are thinking of. But Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, when they went to Vrindavan, they didn't have any bhoga, they didn't have any kitchen, they didn't have anything. They were simply depending on the Supreme Lord. Of course, Supreme Lord provided. So, this is the level of surrender required. Now, I'll just speak a little bit about the mission of Sri Rupa Goswami. When Rupa Goswami was there in Vrindavan, in Braj, and it's not the Vrindavan what we know today. It is a whole different Vrindavan which we see today. And that Vrindavan was glorious. full of forest and all beautiful atmosphere. The Yamuna is flowing, and the fragrance of the flowers, the peacocks, and the trees are all bearing nice fruits. All beautiful and natural, not contaminated. When Rupa Goswami was there, a young Brajbasi came to him and said that there on the hill, there's a cow which comes every day and profusely gives milk from the udder. Nobody has to milk the cow, it just comes out. And it's being fed there. So Rupa Goswami is thinking, there must be something very special about this place. So he went there and he observed and he saw the cow standing, and from the udder, it just profusely milk was just squirting out into the hill. And it was taken into the hill. So Rupa Goswami is thinking, there must be something very special about this place. And of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that you go there and establish the places of transcendental pastimes of Krishna. And how will you know? He said, Krishna will tell you. So of course, the Lord came in his dream and said, I'm here. So next day he went to the villagers and told all the villagers, come with me, help me. So they came with their axes and their hoes and everything, started digging. And when they started digging, they found the most beautiful deity of Govindji. You know. Now this deity, of course, you see, it wasn't made by someone in Jaipur carving with the stone and then it was ordered by someone. It was, you can say, Swayambhu, it's self-manifesting. It has been there for years and years before. You know, thousands of years before, when things went wrong and Krishna was buried there by the brahmanas due to the fear of people coming and breaking the deities. This was a typical Muslim thing, break everything that is not according to their religion. Anyway, so Rupa Goswami discovered Govindji and he established Govindji there. And then all the villagers brought all the wonderful bhoga and cooked, and then they bathed the deity with all milk and honey and yogurt, everything, and then did the grand abhishek and established worship and offered a huge feast. And from that day onwards, they started worshipping Govindji. And then sometimes some king came and said, I would like to do some service for you. So Rupa Goswami said, for me, I don't need anything. My Govindji is everything to me. Give something to Govindji. So then, of course, as we have been, most of you who have been to Vrindavan have seen the temple of Govindji. Very, very beautiful temple. And Govindji was established there. Now, if you have seen the temple of Sri Govindji, of course, later on, Radharani came. This is a different mood. We'll get into a little while. Now, when Govindji is established in the temple, and all grand worship is there, and all the villages from nearby, from the whole Braj, would come there and worship Govindji, according to the system established by Srila Rupa Goswami, because he was very expert in worshiping Krishna. Why? He is worshiping Krishna in the spiritual world as Rupa Manjari. So he knows how to worship. That is why he has set a standard of worshiping the beautiful form of Govindji. Now, in that temple of Govindji, if you go and visit all around, take a parikrama, go every nook and corner, do you find anywhere nice, elaborate quarters for the residents of Rupa Goswami? There isn't. Because Rupa Goswami said, I don't need anything. Everything is for my Lord. Everything for Krishna. So Rupa Goswami could very easily tell the king, yes, you know, I'm living here. I'm living under the tree every day. I don't have any real, you know, basic needs, what we call basic needs. We'll a small quarter here with my bedroom and my kitchen and my quarters here. None of that. Now in the same principle, Srila Prabhupada is teaching us. Now you see, Prabhupada is following very much in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada, when he first acquired land in Mayapur, what did he do? He said, build a guest house here and the long chakra building. Prabhupada was concerning that many of my disciples will come here. They cannot live in these austerities. So the long building was built for accommodating the Western disciples. And the present day, what is Lotus Building, was for some dignitaries who would come to visit Mayapur. And then, of course, those dignitaries would be somehow, you know, wealthy people who would then kind of be generous enough to give service to Prabhupada and donate Prabhupada some money. But in that Lotus Building, if you go today, there is quarters of Prabhupada. What is Prabhupada's rooms? He just took standard room, which was in the guest house. Nothing special about it. And then just down the corridor, there is the common bathroom, which Prabhupada used that. He did not say that, look, I am the acharya now. Make the separate quarters for me. I want a separate bedroom. I want a separate darshan room. I want a separate kitchen. I want my separate bathroom. I want all my separate. Prabhupada did not want any of this. Prabhupada was concerned how best I can give Krishna everything. And his second concern was to give best facilities to his devotees. Because he knows that these devotees who are going to come to Krishna consciousness are coming from a very conditioned life. And they will not be able to perform the kind of austerities required. So all facilities will be given to them so that it makes life a little easy for them and to practice Krishna consciousness and not give up Krishna consciousness at the first hurdle. But as we become more and more familiar with Krishna consciousness practice and our devotion increases through our chanting, our dedication, studying the sastra and getting more and more depth of the knowledge, then the renowned spirit comes. And we minimize our requirements. We do not care for all these things. We just require some basic minimum facility. But on the contrary, we see, as we are getting more and more quote-unquote advanced, our needs are getting more and more. We want more. We want more facilities. We want more this, more that. We want all opulence. And if opulence is not given to you, then you kind of feel offended, saying, I'm a senior-most devotee. You're not following proper etiquette here. Why are you not offering me all these things? I'm the representative of the Supreme Lord. Don't you understand? Philosophy says, the Supreme Lord and his representative are supposed to be treated equally. So why I am not getting 6 offerings a day? I am a representative of the Supreme Lord. I am the supreme representative of the Supreme Lord. I must get everything. Of course, that is illusion and maya. The more you advance, the less and less your requirement is in terms of material things. And more we become attached to Krishna and serving Krishna and think what will please Krishna. That is the most important. So of course, Rupa Goswami established Radha Govindji, and then later on his brother established Madan Mohanji, and then consequently all the other deities came, and then Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was worshipping Shaligram, and he was thinking, I am so deprived. I cannot put a crown on the Shaligram. I cannot dress them very nicely. I cannot give opulence to the Lord. So then Lord said, okay. I will fulfill your desire. And all the Shaligrams fused together. And that became Radha Ramanji, you know, beautiful deity of Radha Raman. So it's not that someone carved the deity. It's all the Shaligrams fused together by Krishna's arrangement. And beautiful Radha Raman, or Ramanji, he manifested. And then Gopal Bhatta could offer all opulence and dress him very nicely and serve him very nicely. Of course, all this principle of deity worship comes from Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was very expert, who was trained under Rupa Goswami. So Prabhupada also said that for us, if we need to learn actually how to serve their lordships, we have to learn the worship of the Lord from Radharaman's standard. Because that standard is coming from Gopal Bhatta Goswami and in turn coming from Rupa Goswami. And of course, originally coming from the spiritual world, how the Lord should be worshipped. Anyway, so worship was established. Then many, many places where Rupa Goswami would go to sleep at night and thinking, Lord, why I'm here? And then the Lord would say, hey, look, go to this place. This is where I killed the Kasi demon. This is where I chastised Kaliya. This is where I did my Chirharan, stealing the clothes of the gopis. And all these sites were given. And then Rupa Goswami would go with the villagers and establish monuments. And with the help of different pious kings, they would build monuments to dedicate these places of Krishna's pastimes. So, of course, now when we go to Vrindavan, we are very fortunate that, you know, all these pastimes are there with monuments. And there are literatures where you can follow and follow the path of Parikrama and say, this is what happened here, this is what happened here. Not just Vrindavan, but the whole of Braj. You know. And then, of course, in the beginning when Rupa Goswami went there, he met Brinda Devi. And he excavated the ground there and the beautiful deity of Brinda Devi came. And after that, he established worship of Brinda Devi. And that place became known as Vrindavan. And then that deity went to Kamyavan later on. But point is that Rupa Goswami established Brinda Devi and Vrindavan, all the places of worship which we go now as a Parikrama site. And we have access to all these beautiful places to see all the wonderful pastimes which took place of the Lord. And the mood is that when you go to these places, you actually get to see the exact spots where this wonderful pastime took place. And it is a deep meditation for us. But generally, we don't go with a deep meditation mood. We go with the tourist mood, you know, with our smartphones and cameras and take photos, and selfies. Yes, this is where Kaliya Ghat is, you know. And then we have an album of our photos and say, this is me at Kaliya Ghat, this is me at Vamsivat, this is me in Kamyavan, this is me in Jawat, this is me in Govardhan, this is me. And it's all me. What happened to Krishna, the central object of our worship? He's kind of lost. We have to focus back. So this Rupa Goswami, by mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he established all the places of pastimes of Krishna, not for some aggrandizement or some selfie-taking futuristic people. And remember, this is me. This is me. I am here. No. It is for deep meditation and remembering the pastimes of the Lord. That this is where the Lord actually put his lotus feet. We are so fortunate that we can actually be on the same ground, which was touched by the lotus feet of the Lord. And wherever the Lord touches his lotus feet, becomes transcendental, very pure. But what do we see? We don't see the transcendental purity there. We see a lot of muck and a lot of neglect. And we can see this mosquitoes and smell, you know. And we kind of be on a material platform, rather on a spiritual platform. So Rupa Goswami, by his causeless mercy, he established all the wonderful places of pastimes of Krishna. He gave us the worship of the Lord. Then he wrote lots and lots of literatures. Of course, the principal one which Srila Prabhupada has given to us is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or in short, Nectar Devotion. And the Nectar Devotion is actually kind of, you can say, a handbook for us to learn the principles of bhakti. Not just that we read the Nectar Devotion, but actually every page there is very, very profound instructions which we have to embrace. And try to follow this. And if you follow the process of Nectar Devotion, then we'll actually become the drinker of the nectar of devotion. Otherwise, it will be just a showcase. Yes, I read Nectar Devotion. Oh, 20 times I have read. Oh, very nice. 20 times, man. You have done more than what I have done. So you must have really embraced every single instruction in there. Yeah. But then he comes to real surrender and renunciation. He's not there. So, of course, Rupa Goswami is teaching by his own example that as we become more and more advanced, we should becoming less dependent on material thing, become more renounced and be focused in the Supreme Lord's worship and his holy names. Because the worship of the Supreme Lord also in Kali Yuga is not that we have elaborate ceremonies, but what we have is worship the Lord with the holy name. Because the holy name is the only way we can actually worship the Supreme Lord in Kali Yuga. The deity worship in this most elaborate form was in Dwarpa Yuga. Kali Yuga, the Dharma, as I mentioned earlier on, is Harinam Sankirtan, the holy name. So we have the deity worship established by Rupa Goswami. We have the places of beautiful pastimes of Krishna established. He's written books, many books. Unfortunately, some of the books which were not quite good enough for us because we would take it in a wrong spirit. You know, if you go to the Madan Mohan Temple, there is a place on the ledge there with a small monument where all the books are buried there because this knowledge cannot come to us. Because it did come to us, we kind of take it in the wrong way and we may not understand the very deep relationship of Krishna and the gopis and Radharani and all the Panjaris and the Vrindavan pastimes. But principal books of Bhakti are there. And then in practical sense, the art of devotion is taught by Rupa Goswami in his teachings. You know, especially the teachings of Lord Chaitanya is very much mentioned there, all the principles of how we can approach the Supreme Lord in the mood of Rupa Goswami. And basically, as Prabhupada mentions, we are not known as anything except Rupanugas. Why we are Rupanugas? Because we are followers of Rupa Goswami. And we have to really take, you know, very, very seriously the teachings of Rupa Goswami and embrace that in our life if we want to be successful in our spiritual endeavors. Just like in the biographies mentioned unless and until you take full shelter of Rupa Goswami, you cannot get shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And without Mahaprabhu's shelter, you don't get anything. Because all the doors are locked to the spiritual world, the secrets of spirituality. Because Mahaprabhu has opened this up for who? Those who are following him. And how to follow? He had entrusted his lieutenant, Rupa Goswami, to establish the principle of how to understand. That's why Rupa Goswami is Manobhistam. He understands the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we also can somewhat understand Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Rupa Goswami. And of course, all the other principles given to us by Prabhupada. So we are very fortunate that we have the opportunity to become Rupa Nugas, and at the same time, we have the opportunity to become Prabhupada Nugas. Because Prabhupada is our direct source of connection to Rupa Goswami. And if you follow this principle, then there is, of course, no loss in our process of practicing our process of bhakti. And we'll become more and more encouraged every day if we fulfill the order of Rupa Goswami and the spirit of Rupa Goswami. And we have to try and put this into practice in our own lives, then we become very perfect and situated in our spiritual practices. So it's 8:45, I think I have to follow some discipline here. I was going to read a lot more from the... But anyway, I'll just quickly tell you what to do. Is in your private time, you go to Madhya Lila, and this is chapter 19. Sri Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Srila Rupa Goswami. And just read this chapter, and you will get the insight into the relationship between Rupa Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and what Mahaprabhu has actually taught Rupa Goswami. And we, of course, now are the beneficiary by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami that we have access to this transcendental teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sri Rupa Goswami, through Sri Kaviraj Goswami, to Prabhupada, to us. So it is all coming in the nectarian line. And as it's coming down the line, it becomes more and more sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. You know. So we should take full advantage of this opportunity which we have to follow these teachings and then embrace them. And at some stage, hopefully, our minds and our hearts will become so purified that we can actually put it into practice, all these wonderful teachings, and then become glorious in our spiritual life, and then go back home, back to Godhead. So I will stop here. If anybody has any comments or any questions. Okay. Yeah. Yes. You see, this is from a materialistic point of view. If you look at that from one point of view, people are dying every day. Everywhere they are dying. In that sense, the whole material world is contaminated. So, how we can accept these things as pure? But by the touch of a brahmana who's pure at heart, just like the sun, when the sun is shining and there is a lump of stool and urine, becomes purified by the action of the sun, because sun is pure. So similarly, the devotee of the Lord, whose heart is filled with Krishna, whatever they touch becomes pure. So on a material platform, we see things, it is contaminated. Only like, for example, here in England, we are very, very thankful to Thames Water Company, who are giving water through our pipes, and you open the door, faucet or tap in UK, and you drink the glass of water, and you're quite happy. And you will not get any effects of diarrhea or any other problems, which you would get everywhere else. Okay. But this water which we are drinking has passed through the body of people who have drunk and passed urine, and it goes into the sewage system and goes into the Thames Water Company. They purify the water and put it back to you. And then you take that water and you say, Gokulananda, I'm going to offer this water to you. And I think, hello? What is going on here? Now, if your consciousness is contaminated, then that water will be contaminated. But if you see this water is pure, because Krishna, it's by the vision of Krishna, it becomes pure. And it's pure. Nothing is contaminated. It is just your consciousness which is contaminated. And therefore we see things contaminated. But everything, as Rupa Goswami is teaching us, everything that is favorable to use for Krishna is perfect and pure. So we have to see things in the right consciousness. That when Rupa Goswami took that piece of cloth which was lying discarded at a crematorium site, from a material point of view, it may be contaminated. But because it is touched by the brahmana's heart, who is pure, then it becomes pure. You see, it's just like, you know, I give this example of my physics experiment, that we were given a magnet and a piece of iron. And then in the experiment, we put the piece of iron stuck to the magnet. And after an hour or so later, you take the magnet and iron apart, and the iron, which has been stuck to the magnet, has now developed the qualities of the magnet. And it has got some magnetic qualities. Although prior to it becoming in contact with the magnet, it did not have that. It was just a lump of iron. So similarly, that which is impure, when it comes in contact with pure, becomes pure. So we have to take it from that perspective. Everything is pure. Otherwise, this whole world is contaminated, my friend. Every step is contaminated. Then how are you going to get purity? But by the transcendental presence of the Supreme Lord, the presence of the Holy Name, presence of the devotees who are pure at heart, everything goes pure. And that is why it transcends, just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, transcend this material platform. Come onto the transcendental platform. So even though within the material world, everything can become transcended, simply by the Supreme Lord and His purity. So we have to see in that light that it is pure in that sense. Okay? Okay, I think we are running out of time, so I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Rupa Goswami ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari 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 Bol.